Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are very glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to have back here on the program the man that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Dora Moore. And let me point out, ladies and gentlemen, this is purely an honorary title. But for a long time, he's been here with us once a month on the first Wednesday to talk about food. And we always have a good time picking some topic and talking about that and telling stories and exchanging recipes, asking questions. Sometimes people have called in with questions and said, look, I'm trying to make this thing and it's just not working. What do you think I'm doing wrong or what might I do differently? We've done that. We've done a lot of different things, but we always have a good time. And this time around, the man here says he would like to talk about tomatoes. We're now approaching the point, well, I don't know if we're approaching. Sometime soon in the months ahead, there will be tomatoes. There will be good, fresh tomatoes of the kind that you just can't get otherwise. You got to grow them yourself or you have to go to the farmer's market. They don't travel all that well. Of course, the rest of the year you can get them in cans, which are fine. And there are some, we were just here chatting now about the kinds of cherry tomatoes and grape tomatoes, the little ones that you can get, and that they're pretty good. But particularly, he wanted to talk a little bit about things you can do with tomatoes other than using them fresh or drying them. We got some in-between things. We got some roasting we're going to talk about here this morning. So questions are certainly welcome. Recipes are certainly welcome, particularly if you have something that's maybe a little unusual, a tomato recipe that goes beyond just slicing it and eating it or making a BLT or what have you. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you can give us a call. So what is Scott you talking, thinking about tomatoes? Want to talk about tomatoes?
Well, in the first place, someone called in on one of our last shows, which, of course, was last June, when we were talking about tomatoes, and said and made a comment about roasting tomatoes. And, of course, I didn't know exactly what that meant. I thought, oh, well, yeah, you would dry tomatoes in the oven or you can broil them. But I'd never had dealt with roasting. And so I sort of put that on the, as it were, the back burner. And I've thought and thought and thought about it. And finally, I have found a reference to slow roasting tomatoes. And what it does is it caramelizes the sugars and concentrates the flavor and gives you an object that tastes totally different and richer and better and fuller than just a sliced tomato. Although I also remember one caller last time said, hey, there's nothing wrong with a good sliced tomato. I said, yes, and a piece of mozzarella cheese.
Yeah, if you can get a good tomato.
Oh, yeah. Well, when that happens. But I should think that, in fact, I'm going to cook this tomorrow for a luncheon. I'm going to use Romas because they have a lot of meat, mm-hmm. not as much juice and a lot of meat. So I'm going to roast the Roma tomatoes. And there's nothing on them, salt and pepper, although I am going to put Herbe de Provence on mine and simply roast them for 3.5 hours at 325 degrees. And that's a lot of kitchen prep, you know. I mean, it doesn't take very long to do it, but then you have to wait for 3.5 hours. But then you do such an amount. You don't just do two or three. You do an amount, and you put them away, and you can freeze them for several weeks, or you can keep them in the refrigerator for a couple of weeks without freezing. And that idea appealed to me very much because that's what I did when I was drying tomatoes, was I would freeze them anyway. And so that kept them safer and better because, I had a lot of botulism when I put oil on the tomatoes and fresh and garlic and basil. Oh, I was putting them away in jars, and next thing I hear, bang, bang, you know, they all exploded. I quit that, and I went to freezing them, and then I'm not as fond of a sun-dried tomato as I am for this particular tomato, which is a little softer. They're wrinkled and they're dark, but they're not leather hard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different texture and a different and I know that I have had sandwiches that this kind of a tomato in a sandwich, especially if you had then roasted peppers and maybe some sautéed onions, a little vegetarian sandwich would be quite good with a tomato prepared this way that you just take right out of the icebox. So I would be interested in people's responses to, well, that sounds like a good idea, or yes, I've done something like that, or what their response to that is, and then we'll get into some other things mm-hmm. with it. But because it appeals to me that it is it's not really a way of preserving or keeping a tomato; it is a way of preparing it. And then the slow roasting, as I say, at 325 for 3.5 hours.
So now you're just taking the tomatoes, slicing them, putting them on a rack,
yes,
and putting them in the oven. You're not going to do anything else. You're not putting any oil on them.
You put oil on them.
Okay.
Yeah, you do put oil on them. And as I say, I think I am going to sprinkle mine with Herbe de Provence, because that will add just a little bit more, but that's the taste that I want, mm-hmm. rather than a more neutral taste. And these then can then be used in soups and sandwiches and what else do they want to use them in? Vinaigrettes and pasta dishes and on sandwiches.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk about pasta dishes a little bit later.
If folks have questions, comments, they want to get on in the conversation, just give us a call, 333-9455, here for Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. It really does. It's amazing what happens to the tomato when you do these different things.
That's why I was interested. It's nothing that we've dealt with, yeah. that thing in between.
Yeah.
Now, I have a sneaky idea that the incentive for this comes from Mexico, because of the charring of tomatillos and the charring of tomatoes. The ripe tomatoes are charred, and the chilies are charred. But that is over an open flame, and they are blackened.
Mm-hmm.
And then you peel it off. But I was surprised when they put the ripe tomatoes on the comal and actually seared them and went ahead and used them. And I thought, well, I understand that there is an elaborate recipe for a roasted tomato soup that is just different from take a tomato soup and puree it and throw the milk in and have at it. And so maybe if somebody knows that recipe, then we might chat about that.
Okay. Well, again, we're certainly interested in things to do with tomatoes, particularly if it's something maybe a little unusual.
Or,
you know, or a little bit off the beaten
new.
Path. Or something.
I think these are new things.
All right. And I think we have somebody to talk with
Good.
Right here on our toll-free line. It's line 4. Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Okay, just what is in Herbe de Provence?
I didn't have my ears on.
The caller was asking what's in Herbe de Provence.
Oh, I knew.
See, this is a thing where different people have different recipes, so it can kind of be, and Doyle has his own favorite.
I have my own favorite.
But other people might, you know, do, it's a combination of dried herbs.
I will tell you this now, and make a plea to one of the helpers that's here in the studio, because they know where to look it up on the files, and they will be bringing it in before the show is up.
Okay.
I can guarantee that. But in essence, there are eight herbs that are used in my version of Herbe de Provence, and I keep them in my billfold. And of course, I didn't bring my billfold into the radio room today, but I can tell you probably six of them, and I always forget one or two. In essence, bay leaf, and excuse me, what I do with the bay leaf is that I go get I go to the store where you buy them in bulk, and I reach down to the bottom of the pile and take the broken ones so that they're much easier to grind up.
Okay.
So bay leaf. Let's see. I'll write down. See if I can get all this. I practiced this last night. I said, don't mention herb de Provence, or
somebody
else you're going to have to do it. All right. Bay leaf, summer savory, and you want that ground. Fennel, and that can be whole seed. Fennel, thyme, and rosemary. Rosemary and
parsley, I suppose.
No. Let's see. What's the one that's like?
Well, I guess you could put it in.
Like oregano. Marjoram.
Marjoram.
Yeah, marjoram.
Yeah. Yes.
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Basil.
And basil. Another B. Yeah, there's two B's. Mm-hmm. Yes, basil. And then my addition, which came later, was lavender.
Mm. Really? Okay.
The lavender buds. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That may be it.
Doesn't it also have sage?
No.
No sage.
No.
Okay.
Here it is. I told you that we would be saved. Here it is. Basil, thyme, marjoram, summer savory, rosemary, bay leaf, lavender buds, fennel seeds. And somebody has added dry sage to this one, only that's not mine.
So, okay, it's like a different version of allspice.
Yes, well, yes.
In a way.
And it's very similar to what you buy when you get Italian herbs mixture or yes. A country mixture of herbs. It's kind of different. Now, even in Provence, the mixtures are different, and when I was there, I was buying various versions of them. But the one that I like the best is the one that I've just given you, and it's equal amounts of all of each of these things. Have them as best you can. Buy the kinds that are ground, so that they're a ground powder, but. Such things as rosemary and thyme and bay, I would put them in a blender. A blender will grind them up better than the Cuisinart, because they just fly through the Cuisinart.
Is this an Americanized version, or is this?
No, this is right straight from Provence.
Okay.
I mean, and me.
Okay.
And then, of course, I gripe every time I find even someone like Dean and DeLuca and all those mixtures that you can buy. I sneer at them because the thing is, mine just tastes great.
Yeah.
And I use it in many, many, many things. And here it is. Well, here's another help from our friends. Yes. Thyme, bay, marjoram, rosemary, basil, summer savory, fennel, and lavender. That's mine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 pieces. Yes, and I gave this recipe in 94. So that's my recipe. And David likes the one with sage.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Right. Yes, you're more than welcome.
Bye. It is a wonderful thing. It does beautiful things for... poultry.
Oh, yes.
It's nice with anything that's got tomatoes and olives in there.
Yes.
You can use that on fish. Just on some roasted potatoes, it's pretty nice.
Yes.
You can do a lot of different things with it. And you can go out and, as you say, you can go out and buy pre-packaged mixtures.
Yes, they have.
But
them.
If you can go to some place where you can buy the herbs or the herbs, as you would say, in bulk... and mix up your own, it's going to be much cheaper.
Much cheaper.
If you buy Dean and DeLuca's or somebody like that, you're going to pay a lot of money for that, where you can just go and you get the herbs and mix up yourself.
As I say, I have an argument with what they put in theirs anyway. But even in France, I found many variations. It just happens that this is the one I think I found this in the market at Carpentras. And so I just fell in love with it. And then later on learned about lavender as we were going through the lavender fields in Gord. Then here were these big fields of lavender. I said, it's awfully good. What do they use that for? And the truth of the matter is all of these things that are in this mixture are growing under your feet if you're on the top of one of those hills. And they talk about the air de Provence. Well, you step outside and all of a sudden, woof, you're just surrounded by this perfume of all of these herbs that you're mashing in. And you look down, there's thyme, there's rosemary, huge bushes of rosemary. Mm-hmm. It's very exotic. You know what? All they just go out and pick some of that and throw it into whatever it was. But I'm a great champion of Herbe de Provence.
Yes, it's a very good thing. We are talking here this morning with the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He's on the program once a month on the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour. We've been doing this for a long time where we talk about cooking. And this time around, he said, well, let's talk about tomatoes and see if we can find some things to do with them that we have never talked about before, some new uses for tomatoes aside from the perfectly good standby things that you might do with a tomato. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with someone in Urbana, line one.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, I was persuaded, David, by your promo announcement to share my tomato sauce recipe with you.
Good.
You wanted to know what to do with all those tomatoes at the end of the season, and I'm going to tell you what I do with them. First of all, I harvest them by rolling a wheelbarrow out in the garden. Baskets are not big enough. Oh. And the wheelbarrow that I use is made out of plastic, so that once I get them back to the house, I can wash them in the wheelbarrow because
yes,
the sink isn't big enough. And then I use a milk crate to take them, one milk crate at a time, into the kitchen from the wheelbarrow with soaking in the water or floating in the water. And over the kitchen, in the kitchen, I have a stainless steel knife clamped, the handle of which is clamped into a drill press vise, if you know what that is, such that the knife protrudes, hangs out over the sink with the sharp side up. And then as I take the tomatoes out of the water one at a time, I grasp them in two hands, slide them over the knife, cutting them in half, squeezing the seeds and juice out into the sink, and then the tomatoes go into a restaurant-size steam table pan, one of these big pans that you see that they're used in steam tables in restaurants. Then after I've got the pan almost filled up with tomatoes, I put in the other ingredients, which are garlic, basil, oregano, salt, pepper, and olive oil. Mix that up, put it in the oven, and let it go for about 6 to 8 hours at 225 degrees. And after that has cooked down and evaporated a lot of the water, I think it would depend on the oven as to how you do this. If the oven is such that the top element comes on frequently and you can't make it not come on, you might want to put a cookie sheet on a rack over the tomato pan, the pan containing the tomatoes, so as not to blacken them too much. Although some people would like that flavor, so if you do, then don't put the cookie sheet on. And after they've cooked down, you take them out, let the whole thing cool a while, and then run it through one of these French Foley mills where you can select the plate with the right size holes in it that will keep out the seeds and the skins and let everything else pass through. So that's my industrial engineering approach to tomato sauce, which was the result of a very serious time motion study, which I had to do in order to make sure that in order to process these bushels and bushels of tomatoes in a reasonable time.
So how much sauce do you end up with?
Well, I put it up in Ziploc bags, and out of that load of tomatoes, I'll usually get somewhere between 15 and 20 bags.
My.
Oh.
Now, that's a standard Italian tomato sauce, and I'm sure you can do variations on it, but we found after experimenting that for if we wanted one sauce that we use for everything, pizza, lasagna, spaghetti, the one with the smallest number of ingredients worked the best. So there were other variations, you know, some of which had orange peel and other things in it. That's too much work for this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want that at a later stage, you can add it. Sometimes what we do, my wife feels that the sauce is a little too thin, so she'll take it out of the bag and then we'll add tomato paste to it during the winter when we use it.
So, mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
Okay. But the idea is that you don't have to peel the tomatoes. You put the raw tomatoes in there with the peels on, and then you take the peels off using the Foley mill, and it's less labor.
That was what I was wondering when you said, I just throw them in. I thought, oops, don't you peel them?
No, you don't peel them.
I waited until we got the answer.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's very good. So you're really slow cooking them.
You're slow cooking them for a long time, and, you know, as industrial as it sounds, it's really a very good sauce.
Yes. Oh, well, that's very good. Thank you.
That sounds good. Well, I'm sure that it's good. If you're dealing with that kind of volume, you got to have a system.
You've got to have a system, yeah. If you try to do it the regular way, you'll never get it done. It's just, you know, it's just too many tomatoes to process. So, But the number that we put up over the year, which is maybe somewhere around 50 bags, serves us for the whole year.
Oh, yes, of course. And they are at the prime when you got them,
that's
too.
Right.
So that's
you're
why they're so good.
You're taking them when they're just perfectly ripe.
Yes. Oh, that's good. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the story. Well, thank you very much. We'll go on here. Let's talk with somebody in Frankfurt here, line number 2. Hello.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi,
I just wanted to make a remark about the oven-dried tomatoes that you were speaking about earlier.
Yes.
I've made them for years. We call them Martha tomatoes because Martha Stewart had something in one of the programs many years ago.
Yes, indeed.
I've made them since then. And basically, I put the olive oil on them. I put a little bit of salt mixed with any fresh herb that's available in the garden at the time.
Uh-huh.
And there's usually a fairly good amount of herbs that are available then. Just chop them up. And then just a touch of brown sugar with it before you roast them.
Brown sugar, all right, yes.
And it just intensifies the sweet flavor of the tomatoes. And basically what I do is after the tomatoes are done, I just take a vacuum seal. I've got the vacuum sealing bag, you know, machine for the bags for the freezer.
Yes.
And I just take several tomato slices at a time and put them in the bag and seal them up. And I have them all winter long that way to use. And I use them in place of tomato paste. The flavors are intense.
Yes.
And the flavoring from the herbs are already in it.
I
use it in place of the tomato paste. And something else that I've done, and I just thought of it hearing your previous caller talking about the food mill, I will take those, if I have a very large quantity of the oven-dried tomatoes, I will take them and put them through the food mill, you know, taking out the skins and the seeds, and then I've put them into ice cube trays, and I've frozen them in cubes, and then they're very easy to just drop into a sauce.
Yes, they are.
At any time. And, I just find them absolutely indispensable during the winter because you've always got that fresh, wonderful taste of the herbs and the tomatoes.
Yeah, well, that slow cooking is the thing that we're sort of paying attention to that gives a different dimension to just a tomato. There's nothing wrong with any other way that you do it. I know that. But I was curious about this because I've not run into a slow roasting of tomatoes before.
And so
I thought this would be
interesting. What I have ended up doing also, I've got a pressure cooker, which I make my pasta, my spaghetti sauces in.
Oh, yes.
And I found that within a half an hour.
Oh, yes.
You can take your fresh canned tomatoes, put in the either the chopped up or else the pureed dried tomatoes along with it, plus some brown sausage and garlic and such. And the other thing I do, too, is I put in pesto cubes. I take basil and olive oil and garlic during the summer when everything's so fresh. I process them in the food processor, put them in freezer, you know, cube trays, and go ahead and freeze them, ice cube trays, and do the same thing. I freeze them ahead of time, put them in a big bag, and I can take them out one at a time as I need to use them.
Yes,
and
yes.
Everything is just right there for you to you know, make your sauces from.
That's really good. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
All right. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Let's see. We'll go to, we had somebody here on cell phone. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I always love your show. I just got to say that. I wanted to share a sauce recipe. This came about, I do a lot of cooking in my family, and my grandmother is allergic to onions and peppers and garlic, among other things. And if you go to a conventional store, you cannot find a single sauce on the shelf.
You're right.
That does not have one of those.
You're right.
I cannot tell you how many stores we've looked at. So we've discovered our own recipe, which I just love. You start with a tomato sauce, which you can make out of fresh tomatoes, or if it's early in the season like it is now, you have to use canned ones. It does still work. And I start with half, like a small thing of sauce, and then a small thing of stewed tomatoes.
Tomatoes, mm-hmm.
Or if you can get fresh tomatoes from your garden, that's even better. It's so good. Anyway, so I put those in, and then I love to experiment with spices. So that's what makes this one kind of interesting. I put, the sauce and the stewed tomatoes, and then I actually brown some hamburger in, a pan, and I put, it's probably like 3/4 cup of the ground hamburger in there with some of the sauce, and
yes.
Then I would say throw out the meat sauce, but I actually throw some of that in there too. But then we take about between 1/4 and 1/3 cup of very finely sliced fresh dill.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then 2 stalks of fresh rosemary.
Oh, good.
And then, I pick it off the stalk so we don't use the stalk that's in the middle, and chop that up really fine. And throw that in there, and then several fresh mushrooms, and chop those up, not too fine. You can leave those kind of chunky,
mm-hmm.
And throw those in there. And then I put that on and let that simmer for about 20 minutes, maybe not that long, just 10, 15 minutes, but long enough that the herbs really, permeate the whole
right.
sauce.
Yeah, you don't want to cook them too long or they sort of dissipate.
Right, but it just the dill and the rosemary with the tomato and then the meat and the mushrooms. And then one of the things I discovered this past time, because we were eating it, and then what I did was I put it in a separate bowl with some fresh chicken broth that I had made myself,
mm-hmm.
so there was no extra junk in it,
mm-hmm.
and I put that in there, and it made like a soup.
Because
it made it thinner.
Yes, yes.
And then we could eat it with the spoon. And then it had the chunky tomatoes and the mushrooms, and the meat was in larger chunks.
Yes.
And it was superb. So it wasn't like a creamy tomato soup because there's no milk in it.
Right.
But we discovered that was a very unique thing to do.
Well, that's good, and it sounds heretical not to put any garlic or onions in it, but that was your purpose. And that sounds like a very good combination because you're giving a zing to it with rosemary and dill, which is really quite good.
Yeah. So that was my own homemade recipe that I thought I would share with your listeners.
Yes, indeed.
Different and unusual. It's very good.
Well, I like then the making of the soup by the adding of broth.
Because
I do the same. I do the same thing when I make a I'll make a gazpacho, and then I'll add more tomato juice to it and some vodka, and what's the drink?
A Bloody Mary.
A Bloody Mary, yes.
Oh.
I have a Bloody Mary made with leftover gazpacho.
Oh, that actually sounds pretty good.
Yes, it is.
And the soup idea came about because I didn't want starches whatever day
exactly.
it was. You know?
Exactly.
I didn't want the spaghetti or whatever we were putting it on. And it turned out it has a beautiful flavor because, then it had the chicken broth.
Yes.
In it.
Yes,
so.
that is a good way of dealing with the food. I like that. That's very good.
But I did also want to ask. I didn't know if you, by any chance, knew of some rare brand of tomato sauce out there that didn't have garlic and onion in it.
No, I don't know of I don't know of one. But I think one of the top grades of tomato sauce is Muir, M U.
Mm-hmm.
Muir. You might check that because they're paying attention to more things than just selling tomato mm-hmm. sauce. Mm-hmm. So look at those. They're in two or three stores around town.
Okay. Actually, I think I have looked at them, and I think I found one that was close, and it had, like, only one of the ingredients, like, really down far on the list.
Oh, yes.
I think we were going to try it.
Well, I like what you've made here, and especially the soup, because my personal relationship with that is that I have a brother-in-law that cannot stand tomatoes or onions either, and yet he is very fond of tortilla soup. So we make a tortilla soup very much like you're describing.
Yeah, yeah. I've always loved, you know, experimenting in the kitchen and doing my own cooking and my own recipes, so.
Well, that's good, and thank you for doing that.
You're very welcome. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy your show.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
We are a little bit past the midpoint of this part of Focus 580. This is our monthly foray into cooking with the man we like to call our chef-in-residence, Doyle Moore. He's always here the first Wednesday, the 10 o'clock hour, picking some topic, and we talk about that thing.
Well, we can get into the second topic.
All right, let's do that. Now, well, let me get the phone numbers. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Okay.
Yes.
Now
the second topic is, it's only been about a year or maybe 2 years that we've gotten these little baby grape tomatoes. And now they're good, and there are arguments as everybody, oh well, I like them better than cherry, or I like, you know. So there's arguments and that was it. But I want to also respond to Martha Stewart, and she has some ways of dealing with these little grape tomatoes that I think is really outstanding, and that is you don't really cook them for a pasta. They are simply heated up. So one of her recipes is I like it very much. I've used it or a variation of it a couple of times. And what I like is one where you start out with some sausage and red pepper flakes, so that you've got some good zip to the sausage, and then if you're using onion, put the onion in first and let that kind of cook a little bit. I'd slow down on the garlic because that gets a little bit strong for these other nice tastes, but onions, but not a whole lot of green onions, and the sausage, and then let that brown until those are done. Then I would put in I was trying to think last night how I could use lima beans. Of course, if they were green lima beans, that would be. And I realized, well, we've got edamame already. You know, they're green and they're tasty and they're protein. And I would put in probably a half a cup of edamame. That's the Japanese soybeans. I mean, edible soybeans that the Japanese like, edamame. And you can get those frozen. You can get them frozen in the hulls, and that's a different method of eating. But I've found them also have been shelled. And so anyway, you've got sausage and red pepper and the edamame and then shrimp. And shrimp is only going to take about 2 minutes to cook. And then you've got this spicy shrimp mixture going, and then chop in half a goodly amount of the grape tomatoes, and at the very last instant, toss them into this mixture and stir fry them, you know, for less than 20 seconds. Just you're heating them up. And it sort of extracts some of the juice, and it makes them just a little bit limper, but they're still crisp and very juicy. Then you have already cooked maybe a tubular macaroni, or maybe penne. Mm-hmm. Penne would be good. And toss that into it and mix everything all together rather than pouring a sauce on top of what I always... When I first learned about spaghetti, other than the way my mother made it, I called it raw spaghetti. Oh, they put this funny sauce on top of this raw spaghetti. Because I did not come from an environment that put a sauce on spaghetti. You mixed it all together in the pot, and there it was, pink and pretty. And serve that, and what you get is this real fresh taste of the tomatoes, but yet they're cooked. They aren't raw. They don't have an uncooked taste to them. And I have been playing with these of recent because they're now available, and I'm sure that you could do it with any other tomato that you didn't cook a long time. But they're round and they're tight and they hold together with the tiny skin. So I've enjoyed doing that very much. But sausage and shrimp. And some little, now if you didn't have any edamame, I think maybe finely chopped celery would be a good additive to that.
Hmm. You could probably put peas in that.
And peas. Green peas would, and even peas in the pod. The sugar snap peas in the pod would be just magnificent.
And you can't know what get I think might be a little good on that? Maybe a little nice aged feta cheese crumbled on top of that might be good too. What do you think about that?
Feta cheese with shrimp?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a try. I'll give it a try.
And then if you're going to do that, then maybe you should put a few olives in there too.
Well, I would agree to that. Well, there you have it. It's a do-it-yourself kit right here on the radio.
See, that's the nice thing about cooking is you a lot of stuff. You can just do what you want.
Well,
put in there what you like.
You're right. As soon as you put those other tastes in, I was keeping it down to only three or four.
Okay.
But as soon as you put feta cheese in it, yes, olives are almost a necessity. And I had a martini with a great big huge olive stuffed with feta cheese. Boy, was that good.
I don't know, this martini thing. I think it's out of control myself.
Oh, I don't think so. It's only one.
I think it's not drinking them. I mean the things they do, the things they make them out of. I think the martini as a drink, I think it's out of control. I think it's out of control. Myself, you know, a little scotch, a couple pieces of ice. That's good.
Well,
this martini thing's out of control.
Now, as long as we have edged into something else, I had an experience in Chicago that still is just the top of my list. It was because I'm very fond of drinking gimlets when you go out to dinner. I like drinking a gimlet, which is generally made with vodka and Rose's lime juice.
Mm-hmm.
This one had very finely chopped, and then very quickly, cooked rhubarb. So that, and then they put the rhubarb into a blender, and they ended up with a rhubarb puree, and then they added fresh real lime juice, rhubarb puree, and the vodka, and made a gimlet out of it. I couldn't believe it.
Mm.
This was a little restaurant called Lula. At Logan Square. Boy, do I recommend it. Mm.
So then did you get something that was kind of creamy and frothy?
No.
So it was still...
It was pink and it had little threads of rhubarb strained through it, you know, and it was mind-boggling. Oh, was it good? Because I'm really a rhubarb fan.
We have about 15 minutes left with Doyle Moore. This is the monthly show that we do on cooking, picking some topic and talking about that. And then we start one place and who knows where
we end.
But this time around, he said, well, let's talk about tomatoes. We are now soon, we hope, going to be able to go to the farmer's market and get tomatoes. If you're growing your own, well, it's going to be a couple of months before
you won't get them much before. If you've already started them, you might get some on the 4th of July, but if you haven't yet, it's going to be a little bit later, quite a bit later.
But there are now these other kinds of tomatoes you can go to the store. I really like the cherry tomatoes. There's a particular kind that we have in our house that still come on a stem.
On a stem,
in a little bag. Those are really nice, and you can do all kinds of things with them. You can toss them with pasta, like you suggested, and you can make little condiments with them and all kinds of stuff. And those are good. And there are also now little yellow ones, little yellow sort of pear-shaped tomatoes.
Oh, dear, yes.
And the grape tomatoes, these are all really nice. So if you've ever been in the store, you pass by them and you thought, well, that doesn't look like any tomato that I know anything what to do with. You should try those. They're very good. Even if you just want to put them in a salad, that's also a very good thing.
You touched my heart with a little yellow pear tomatoes. Oh, I was in the sixth grade, I think, and Mother sent me to Safeways to get a little box of yellow pear tomatoes, mm-hmm. because she made tomato preserves out of them, and she would do it in just a little strawberry box full. And when I got home, there weren't very many left. I had eaten them.
You were snacking.
All the way.
On the way home.
I wasn't doing it. It just happened.
You know, there's a lot of things in life that are like that. Afterwards, you think, well, you know, I wasn't really doing anything.
Well, I wasn't. I mean, well, another one and another one and another. When I got home, there wasn't enough to.
So what did Mom say about that?
She was not vindictive. I don't remember what was said. I just remember I was sort of surprised that they were all gone and that we weren't going to have any tomato preserves.
But, Mom, where's the tomato preserves?
I love tomato preserves. And those little pear tomatoes make the best ones.
Yeah, okay.
That was 1940.
I would have thought at that time those would have been kind of exotic.
They were old. Mother knew them from her childhood, the yellow pear tomatoes. And they only came out in that part of the summertime. Mm-hmm. And that's all she ever did with them. We never ate them except me. We never ate them plain. I have seen yellow pear tomatoes almost all of my childhood.
Oh.
It may just be something that happens in Kansas and Oklahoma. I don't know. But I believe I would think the same thing that you're mainly because I haven't seen them of recent. You know,
yeah,
they're not that easy to get.
Yeah.
So there you are.
Well, you can grow those too.
Yes, you can.
If you got questions, you got comments, you got recipes, we got time. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We do have someone here ready to go on our line number one in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I have a use for grape tomatoes, something that we do in the summer when it's a really hot day and don't want to cook much. I cook and drain some pasta, any kind you want. And then I toss the grape tomatoes cut in half with a little bit of salt and just a little bit of sugar, maybe half a teaspoon of sugar, and let them sit in a bowl. Then with the cooked pasta, I toss those in with, 2 to 4 ounces probably of feta cheese that's crumbled.
Okay. Yes.
And then I sliced Kalamata olives. And shredded fresh basil and salt and pepper to taste.
And basil, yes.
And it really is fresh. The tomatoes are not even cooked. I guess you could, cook them a little bit if you prefer it that way.
No, there's a great surprise in having it's not like a primavera sauce, but there's a great surprise to having a very fresh tomato. That's why I liked what Martha Stewart was doing, but just heating them up so that you
right.
have them heated.
Right.
Oh, that's very good. Yes, tomatoes and pasta and feta cheese and olives and basil and salt and pepper and oil. Yes.
And yes, oil. And oil. Yes.
Got that. Good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Others are certainly welcome to call, too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Do you have – tell me some more – we were talking earlier about the slow
yes.
roasted tomatoes. Here we're going back to where we were before. But I'd like to hear a little bit more about what kinds of things that you would do with them.
Well, I'm going to go home and make them tomorrow morning and take them to a lunch and to be served as a side dish. And I've been trying to figure out how to do that, because when you prepare them, they're prepared individually. And so I've been going in my mind, well, do I just put them into a bowl and you spoon them out with a bowl? Or do you break them up? I don't want to break them up. Do you layer them somehow, or do you serve them on a very large platter? That might be the answer, is on a platter that's sort of stacked and laid so that you can scoop one up at a time. It'll be my intention for it to be a side dish rather than an additive to anything else. So that's one thing I'm going to do with it. The other one is I've always enjoyed the roasted peppers, and you can get those in a jar, and they are very efficient to use in that way, and to make some sort of a vegetarian sandwich. And I think that the tomato would softened and cooked down and flavored and up that way. I think that would be a very, very good way of using it. If you put it in soup or in sauces, you're going to mash it out of any recognition as to what it once was, and it simply becomes an additive of another taste which you haven't had, because it is going to taste differently. It will not just be a boiled tomato sauce. So that would give quite a verve to a tomato sauce, I think.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. And I'm starting to think more and more about the idea of I sort of like the idea of the charred tomatoes, like you would.
Yes.
Like I'd feel like I want to go out and fire up my charcoal grill.
Exactly.
And do some out there and get that, because that sort of charred, sort of smoky flavor, I think, is really nice.
Well, you can do it on top of the gas stove.
Well, yeah, I suppose you can. I've certainly done bell peppers that way.
Bell peppers, yes.
Just holding them with a pair of tongs,
exactly.
over the flames.
Yes, and then you let them rest for about 5 minutes, and then
yeah, exactly. You put them in a paper sack.
Yep, and then they steam.
And then you can get the skin off that way.
Yep,
and that really is another one of these. It's just something really magical.
And what happens. Is it, you know. I'll tell you the experience that is really awesome. And where it happened to me most was in Cheyenne at the farmer's market. They have these great big barrels, and they're perforated and they rotate, and you buy about a bushel of chili peppers, and you toss them in there, and then they light up that great big gas burner, and they rotate them, and they are roasting those inside. Well, the aura that you get from that is just intoxicating. It is such a treat.
Sure.
Such a treat.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk with somebody here in Mattoon, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I hate to change the subject too much, but it's towards the end of the show. One thing, though, talking about tomatoes, and I just realized over the weekend and going to a number of places, is that more and more places are selling heirlooms.
Oh, yes.
For people who want to grow their own.
And yes.
So I've got 5 tomato plants of various kinds this year, and they're all heirloom varieties. And
good.
Russian tomatoes and from other exotic locales, so we'll see what happens with those. The purpose of the call, though, is another thing that we started doing last year is we planted our own herb garden.
Yes, good
and
for you.
And what I had, well, thank you. And it really is neat to walk out with a pair of clippers and just take whatever you need.
It is.
Mm-hmm. But what I have is I have this mass quantity of herbs that I don't always know what to do with, besides, you know, basil and tomato sauce and, you know, sage on poultry, et cetera. And I'm wondering if you're aware of any kind of cookbook or resource that will kind of say, yeah, with this food, this herb goes well.
So much of that is almost folklore. It's not an exact science.
Mm-hmm.
For example, savory goes with beans, and that's about the only one I know. Mm-hmm. Other than basil goes with tomatoes, and that's a given. And then the Greeks put oregano on everything, so right. that's another given. Rosemary is exceedingly good with certain meats like lamb, mm-hmm. and with certain vegetables. But there are herb books, and the Herb Society here in town has purchased many books in the library.
Okay.
So that is a reference, but so much of it is really just common folklore as to how you use it. I'll tell you, however, what I did to save. You were saying you had all these things going, and I was thinking of it earlier. I take a sprig of rosemary and a sprig of thyme, and a long sprig basil. Let's see, basil and rosemary and thyme, and probably three or four chives of peace, and then I tie them together at the bottom so they're like a little bouquet, and then I roll them in saran wrap and make these little cigars.
Uh-huh.
And put the cigars in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's true that they freeze, and some of the stuff like oregano or basil will turn black, but mm-hmm. They still have the flavor. And I bring them out, and I throw them into soups in the winter when mm-hmm. you want that good taste again. I don't like eating pesto after summer, uh-huh. So I never make pesto and put it away. Other friends do, and some will buy it, but I just say, no, that's worse than strawberries in January, which I enjoy too, but I'm peculiar that way. But I found that the little cigars are very, very convenient and usable.
Well, what I tried to do at the end of the year last year when I knew it was getting time in the fall and it was time to harvest this, I harvested everything, cut it off low to the ground.
Yes.
And hung it and tried to dry it.
Yes, you can do that.
Well, we had a bunch of rain, so that didn't work. But what I did do is put them on baking sheets in about
yes.
a 200-degree oven and just left them
that'll do
like,
it too.
Overnight. And then I cleaned them off the stems and put them in plastic containers and just put them in the freezer.
That'll do it.
And that works
but
great.
Let me give you a suggestion.
Sure.
Don't wait until the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because the herbs come into their oils and flavors sometime during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may want to, what you may think is sacrificing the plant, you'll get it at a high point.
I'm have to jump in here.
Oops.
My apologies to the call, but I'm at the point where we got to stop. With thanks to our chef in residence, Doyle Moyer. Will we see you next month?
Oh, yes. But let's right. see. What is this? This is May,
this
June.
Is May, that's June.
See you in June.
All right. He stops by here first Wednesday of the month. We talk about cooking. It's always a good time.